Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast, Chicago Football Podcast. I'm Kevin Fishbane. It's officially spring, which means next season is summer. And then it's fall, and then it's football season again. But NFL doesn't take a break. We don't take a break. We've got you covered here, talking Bears and getting ready for the NFL draft, which we're going to do today with our guest in a few minutes is Tom Fornelli of CBSSports.com. Shout out, by the way, to Umphreys McGee, of course, for that awesome intro. Got my executive producer, Dan Mata, back, and he is fully cured of his ills from last week. Associate producer John Solly is here as well. Be sure to check out all our stuff at ChicagoFootball.com, ProFootballWeekly.com. You can follow me at KFishbane and our Bears content at Bears_Insider. Hope you all enjoyed the podcast last week with Pat Manley. It was a lot of fun. Bears long snapper. And of course, we record the podcast. We talk about long snapping. And probably 7 minutes after we finished recording, the Bears signed a long snapper, which would have been so perfect to talk about. And Pat actually told me, he goes, oh yeah, he's a good long snapper. It was a good move. We could have gotten the ultimate expert on long snappers.
It's the worst timing.
Terrible
ever.
Timing. But it was still a great podcast and good reminiscing with Pat about my fifth grade class. Had some friends from my elementary school reaching out that they enjoyed getting nostalgic over that. So go ahead and be sure to go. You can find that and listen to that one. Also our podcast with Jared Payton. If you're subscribed on iTunes, of course, the Chicago Football Podcast. And we'll get into the draft and some fun stuff with Tom Fornelli in a few minutes. But first, John Solly. The big news last week, Martellus Bennett finally traded to the Patriots of all teams. So not the Packers, which I think some fans were probably worried about. Him and Gronk are going to be incredible. I'm curious how Bill Belichick's going to handle Martellus Bennett's stuff, you know, the way he is. But it finally happened. We talked about it last week. We talked about it the week before. And now the Bears, even though they have Zach Miller back, are worse at tight end, and their locker room is a little less eccentric.
So here's why the whole Martellus thing is so strange to me. Bennett is arguably top five, top seven tight end in
yes.
the NFL.
Yes.
And everyone knew he was going to get traded, and everyone was mostly okay with it. He's one of the best tight ends in the league, and everyone sort of said, hey, you know, you can go. We ain't going to be mad.
And I think that's a Ryan Pace factor in this town. I think people have and John Fox, people trust them. And it was very evident that John Fox, they were done with having Martellus Bennett in that locker room. They weren't going to pay him what he wanted on a new contract, and they felt comfortable moving on. And it's actually impressive they got a fourth-round pick out of it.
Every team in the league knew that they
wanted to trade Martellus Bennett. They get a pick out of it. They get him out of the conference. They're not going to have to play him, you know, for a few years. But you're right. It is interesting that the way people reacted, we have this trust, I think, in Ryan Pace. And because if Phil Emery makes this move, Jerry Angelo makes this move, I think there's a little more, uproar. But the way John Fox handled the team last year, I think people realize what he's looking for out of his football team. And I think Bears fans have no reason right now other than to just assume that Fox and Pace are going to get this thing on track.
Yeah, it's almost rather Cubs-like in the response. Like, okay, there's a plan. We kind of trust it. Sure, why not? Let's go with this Marty Bennett trade thing. The whole thing is just very interesting to me and how it went down.
Yeah, so that's Martellus Bennett. He is no longer a Bear, and which means the probably the most upset people are going to be the TV stations because they loved getting that 5 to 10 to 30 second soundbite from Martellus Bennett about whatever it was he was talking about in the locker room. But we're going to shift gears and start talking a little NFL draft and other Bears stuff and maybe some fun media conversations with our guest on today's podcast. It's Tom Fornelli from CBSSports.com, covers college football there. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. Tom, are you going to miss Martellus Bennett?
I will not miss his drops. I'll miss what he gives the Bears offense as far as, you know, as what he can do when he actually catches the ball and helps spacing the field and spreading the field deep. But I don't know. I feel like with Martellus, he's a good player. He's also, you know, like you, I heard you guys talking about, he's a bit of a character. It's just, I feel like sometimes when you're going to be as much of a character as Martellus was, you need to be a little bit better than Martellus was too. So I'll miss him because I don't know who our pass catching tight end really is going to be this year now. So that's kind of a question mark, but I don't think he's going to be a major loss. No.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that we've talked about with the running back position too. It's worse now without Matt Forte, but that was a business decision. So, Tom, we're going to talk some draft stuff, but before I get to actual draft stuff, speaking of Bears news, What was your favorite moment of the Shea McClellan era in Chicago?
The one time he got off a block, that was great. I loved that. He shed that running back like he was nothing.
It was a memorable moment. I actually, my first training camp I covered, one of the practices, this was 2013, Shea was having himself a day, just getting the backfield every time. And I moved around to kind of see the situation. Well, he was going against Jamarcus Webb the entire practice. And Webb was cut later, and we all know how that's ended up turning out for Shea. But I think Shea's a fascinating Chicago study. I'm kind of sad he's going to be gone for all the fun Shea stories. Not that Shea provided a whole lot of fun stories, because unlike Martellus Bennett, he was not a very colorful locker room guy. But the way that he was pegged in this town, you know it, Tom, with all these teams in the city, when you're a first-round pick and you're not good on the field, you're going to kind of be the butt of all the jokes around town.
Yeah, and you have to give him credit, because every year he was here, they were trying him somewhere else. And he was working to try to be, you know, a capable player at all these different positions they kept putting at. It's just right from the beginning, you know, it was when they drafted him, I was like, I wasn't very sure with the pick. I'd seen him while he was at Boise State, and I thought he was a good player. I didn't think he was like a first-round pick kind of player. And then just watching him as they moved along, it was always clear to me from the beginning, is like, this guy's just not going to be a very good NFL player. And they tried everything they could. You understand why they tried everything they could. But it's just, you keep forcing him into the situation, and you combine that with the Bears losing, and you're going to look, you know, Trestman and Emery are gone. So you have to turn that blame towards somebody. And it's like, oh, there's the shining beacon, the reflection of what the Phil Emery, Mark Trestman regime was like right there. Shea McClellan.
And, of course, I'm happy for Shea. He got some coin in New England, too,
yes,
which is very impressive. You know Bill Belichick's going to turn him into a Pro Bowler. Phil Emery's going to be thrilled, because he can kind of brag about everything that he did. But that's the way of the world in football. So Tom Fornelli is going to be a great guest for this podcast, because he can talk college football and draft with us. And, Tom, you're a Bears fan more so as opposed to someone that covers it, so I think you can bring a unique angle to making fun of the Bears. And I'm encouraging you later in this podcast to make fun of the way we cover the Bears. So I hope you're prepared to do that.
Sounds good.
So let's talk about pre-draft content in terms of I'm always fascinated about when you cover college football all year round, and then you see the way that the NFL media is covering the draft and some of these players in such a different sphere when you're talking about moving from the college game to the pro game in this pre-draft process. So what's your favorite thing to read? Is it a mock draft, a combine hand size story, or anonymous scouts?
I love the hand size stories just simply because I like to compare my own hands to the quarterbacks. And I've got large hands. I'm about 9 5/8 inch hands, so I could play quarterback in the NFL.
You could be on my team any day, Tom.
Yeah, just based on that, I know I'm a first round pick.
you're better off than Jared Goff.
I know. Jared's got nothing on my hands. I mean, yeah. I could palm a basketball with ease. It's no problem.
Is there a player this year that you read some of the stuff on Twitter or on NFL sites and you're kind of think to yourself, man, I covered this guy in college. I watched all of his games. It's amazing to see that how can NFL people not be in love with this guy? Is there any player like that for you this year?
No, you know, I get it's kind of a, like you're mentioning the mock drafts, and I do pay attention to mock drafts, and it's kind of boring. I always think it's boring when an offensive tackle is going to be the first pick, and I think it's pretty clear that Larry McTunsil's going to be a first-round pick. But that's interesting only because Tunsil missed so much of last season because he had some, you know, NCAA violation things they were dealing with. But what's strange to me is every year the quarterbacks come out, and this year I really don't think this is a very good quarterback class at all. I think we've got some, you know, possible career backups in this quarterback class, but that whole franchise QB thing, that's not going to happen in this class, I don't believe. So when I look and I see, you know, Cleveland's at number two, and they're either going to take Carson Wentz or Jared Goff, and I feel like, you know, Cleveland's going to continue being Cleveland, because when I look at those kind of guys, Carson Wentz, I get because of the size, and he's got some, you know, the arm and all that kind of things. But I feel like Carson Wentz is a guy that the NFL scouts are falling in love with simply because the offense he played in at North Dakota State, even though they aren't playing, you know, the top FBS Power 5 competition, they're in the FCS and they're an FCS powerhouse. But it's very similar to NFL offenses. So with a guy like Carson Wentz, he's going to come in and there's not going to be a huge adjustment. It's just the ceiling there, I don't think, is very high. I think he's going to be a guy that comes in and he's going to be a game manager. And if you really want to take a game manager with the second pick of the draft, more to you. Goff, I think, has the highest ceiling of every single quarterback in the NFL draft this year. It's just I don't think he's going to be like a Pro Bowl guy or a guy that you really want to build your team around and hoping he wins Super Bowls. I think he's just going to be a serviceable quarterback that's probably going to stick in the league for quite a while. But he's going to be more like a Ryan Fitzpatrick-ish type, where he's somewhat of a game manager, but he's a little bit more. He's capable of more at times, and I think that's the kind of future I see with Goff, where he's always going to be able to get work. He's never going to be the kind of guy you want to build around.
Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard. You know that, Tom?
I've heard. And, you know, Jared Goff went to Cal, which is not exactly
very,
you know,
very good school, but yeah, it's not Harvard. The thing with Carson Wentz, for me, selfishly, I want him to succeed for gingers everywhere. He's not a full-on like Andy Dalton, but he's got enough, and I haven't seen him get ripped for it yet, so I'm kind of hopeful for that. It's funny, though, this year you counter poor quarterback selection with teams that are so desperate for quarterbacks. When you look at Cleveland, mm-hmm. St. Louis, San Francisco, we're actually going to have our first set of mock drafts on ProFootballWeekly.com this week. I don't like doing them, but I did one, and I actually had three quarterbacks going in the top 10, not because I think any of them are that good, but because I'm looking at San Francisco, and I'm looking at Cleveland, I'm looking at these teams, like they have to take somebody, yeah. And they're going to, you know, one of these teams is going to freak out and see a quarterback go off the board and just jump up and take one. And I think you're right. I don't think any of these guys scream franchise quarterback. But the problem, too, and I think this could help a Connor Cook or a Christian Hackenberg, some of these other round guys, I bet you NFL teams are looking at Kirk Cousins and what he did last year. And everyone thinks they can go find the next Russell Wilson. They're thinking that they're going to go find their guy and they're going to make it work no matter what anybody else says.
Yeah, for sure. But I agree. It's because quarterback's the most important position on the field. It's always been the most important position on the field. So even if the options aren't great, if you're in desperate need of a quarterback, it's better to have an okay one than none at all. It's just if I'm Cleveland, I'm trading down, or at least I'm really looking to trade down. I'm looking to get, you know, because Cleveland's got more problems than quarterback. So I'm looking to trade down for a whole bunch of picks and maybe get a quarterback in the second, third, or fourth round, where the quality between the guys you're going to be taking then compared to the ones you're going to be taking in the first round at number two really isn't that great of a – there's not really that great of a disparity between them.
I wonder if LeBron James follows the Browns on Twitter. See, I think that would be – or, you know, that's what media has come to now. I mean, has Jared Goff followed the Browns? Does even Joe Hayden follow the Browns anymore? He probably doesn't. Joe Thomas probably doesn't have Twitter. But
I can't wait for another, like, at this time in 2025 or whatever, and a journalism course at Northwestern is cultivating sources through Twitter follows.
Oh, it'll happen. I'm sure of it. And then so this mock draft that I did earlier, because I put three quarterbacks in the top 10, DeForest Buckner was there for the Bears at 11.
Oh, I love your mock draft.
Yeah, I'm sure Bears fans are getting excited. So that brings us to the number 11 pick. Taking your knowledge and expertise in college football and who you kind of want the Bears to take, I'm sure Buckner's right up there. Who are some of the other guys you're looking at for 11?
Buckner's my number one target. If he's there and they don't take him, there, you know, you might hear. I'll be at the draft this year, so you might hear a scream on television coming from the upper balconies. I love Buckner, number one. I feel like the Bears, what I love that Ryan Pace has done so far with free agencies, they've addressed quite, you know, they had plenty of needs on defense in particular, and they've addressed a lot of the needs, which gives them the option of whenever their pick comes around at number 11, they're going to be able to pick the best player available. It's just when you look at this draft, I think the best players available typically are all the defensive linemen. So I can't help but believe that that's the direction the Bears are probably going to go in the first round, and that's the direction I prefer they go, because I'm a hardcore believer in that you build through your defensive line and your offensive line and you go from there. So if I'm the Bears at 11, if DeForest Buckner's not there, I would look at somebody like A'shaun Robinson from Alabama, maybe even Jaron Reed from Alabama. Shaq Lawson I like as a player. I just don't think he's much of a fit in what the Bears do. I think he's more of a 4-3 defensive end, which I don't know if Vic Fangio can get a lot out of different guys at different positions, so maybe. But I just don't think that's a great fit. If those guys aren't available, maybe you look at the offensive tackles. If somehow Ronnie Stanley falls to you, or even I'd consider Jack Conklin. I just think that what the Bears really need to do in that first round is get a defensive lineman and an offensive lineman. Although I know it's always boring when your first round pick is an offensive lineman because they're not the sexy picks. But if you look at the offensive line that the Bears have, you know, they lost the free agent they signed from New Orleans who'd been our left tackle the last few years.
Jermon Bushrod.
There we go. Jermon Bushrod's gone. So we need somebody at left tackle, and I think maybe if you get a guy like Ronnie Stanley, he's good enough. I think you could just plug him in there right away, and he's not going to be great that first season, but I think he's going to become a really good, solid left tackle in the NFL for years to come. So I think that's a key position to get. So I hope they go with a lineman, either whether it's offensive or defensive.
And then when you look into the late middle rounds and later rounds, because defensive line is an interesting position, you can make the argument that it's so deep, you can find a starter in the second round too. Mm-hmm. If they take a Ronnie Stanley in the first round or Conklin or something like that. I agree with you about Shaq Lawson. I think it was McShay or Kiper. One of them had him going to the Bears in a mock draft, so everyone went crazy. They got all excited because obviously a March 15th mock draft is going to, you know,
they're solid.
Yes, it's going to peg exactly what the Bears are going to do. When you look at some of the not even just defensive linemen, who are some of the guys in some of the middle later rounds, considering where the Bears' needs are, that are maybe on your Tom Fornelli Bears draft board? Because I'm sure you have one of those.
Oh, I do. I actually, back in March, I did my own mock draft just for my own amusement.
Nice.
With just going through picks for the Bears, trying to figure out what would be available. And sadly, the combine came and blew up my second round hope, which had originally been Eli Apple, the cornerback out of Ohio State. But there's no way that's happening anymore. But other guys, you know, just defensive linemen typically that I like that you could find in later rounds. If you don't get, you know, the guy in number 11, maybe a guy like Jonathan Bullard from Florida still there in the second round, or Carl Nassib, although he might – I don't know how he would really peg in Fangio's defense. I don't know how Fangio would want to use him if he'd be a true fit, but I just like Carl Nassib as a football player. Sean Oakman is a dude who gets tons of press because he's, like, built like a Greek god. It's just he only plays hard 20% of the time, so that's somebody I'd really like to stay away from. Jihad Ward, a guy from Illinois, a defensive end who was a JUCO transfer out of Philly. He only played two seasons at Illinois, and Illinois has been bad the last 2 years, so he didn't get much pub or press. But just watching him play, the dude is huge. He's 6'5", 297 pounds, and he's an athletic freak. He's a very good football player, too. So I think that's the kind of maybe early to mid-round type of pick that you can make later that would be really helpful. But at other positions and linebackers, I still think they need to get another linebacker in there just, you know, for depth. I really like Scooby Wright out of Arizona. He missed a lot of last year because of an injury, but before that, you know, he was pretty much a premier defensive player in college. And had he not gotten injured, he'd have probably been, you know, if he'd played all of 2015 and had another season like he had in 2014, this is a guy we're probably talking about as a first round pick. But right now, he's probably pegged more for the second or third. So if he's there, he's one of those dudes that when he shows up at the combine, he's not going to wow you. It's just when he gets on the field, he's just a football player, which is something that you need sometimes. And I think that was, you know, one of the problems with the whole Emory regime is they were drafting a lot of athletes, but they weren't really paying attention to these guys playing football in college. And Wright's one of those guys where he's not going to wow you with his 40. He's not going to have a great vertical. He's not going to have great shuttle runs and all that kind of stuff. But when you put him on a field and have him go get the ball, he goes and gets the ball. So he's a guy I like. And another tackle, offensive-wise, if the Bears can't get, you know, if they don't get a Ronnie Stanley or Jack Conklin or something in the first round, just a mid-round pick, I really think Kyle Murphy out of Stanford is a guy that he's probably not going to be able to start for you as a rookie, but I think I like his build. I like his footwork and what I've seen from him at Stanford, which is always putting out, you know, solid offensive linemen. To me, he's the kind of guy that maybe in 2017 can slot in as your starting left tackle.
Tom, you know why you'd be a good GM?
Because I'm handsome.
Yes, and the hand size, but also the fact that you describe Scooby Wright as a football player, GMs love that. They love and you know what's fun? Because for me, like, I know exactly what you mean, and I'm not even, like, mocking the description of it, but GMs and head coaches love saying that, and people roll their eyes. But, like, I understand what that means, but you have it down.
Yeah, no, it's just pretty much saying that, you know, there are guys who aren't – there's always players like that. They're not – when you put them in through, like, the tests and have them run the four – like, the combine's fun to watch, but it only tells you so much about a guy because nobody's ever actually going to be playing football in those conditions.
Not yet, at least.
Yeah, not yet. Maybe in a couple more years.
Right.
But it's like when it's like a switch goes on for certain players. They're not as fast. It's just they play faster than they are in real life. And Scooby Wright is just one of those dudes where he knows the game. He knows he diagnoses offenses. He understands what the offense is trying to do, to him, and he counters and he goes and gets the ball. He goes and gets the quarterback. He's a versatile player. You can move outside, inside, and have him be a pass rusher or just have him be a run stuffer, depending on what defense or base you're in. And he just goes and gets the ball. He's an excellent football player. And he's kind of, he's a little off in the head, which, let's be honest, helps.
It does. And the headline writers in Chicago will be thrilled for any puns that they can do.
Yeah. You'll get so many Scooby Does headlines if you draft him. I swear. You need to get him if you can.
When I'm thinking about, these football players, and then there's John Fox, who wants, the best human talent available, of course. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who, when you cover college football, you're used to the Nick Sabans and the D'Antonios and how some of these guys handle the media. When you watch John Fox, as somebody who covers college football, so and you're in the media, so you understand how it works, but you're also a Bears fan and probably would love to get some information. What's your take on the way Foxy handles the media?
Well, see, the thing is, it's like going from Lovey with how Lovey handled it to Tressman and now to John Fox. It's like, I wish he would give me more info for sure, but it's like at the same time, I'm also just comforted knowing that at least we have like a professional coach who seems to know what he's doing handling it. Like when you listen to Tressman speak, it was always kind of like, man, if I was a football player and this is the guy that's trying to fire me up before a game, I would tune him out so fast. At least John Fox, I feel like, can command respect of his team. I never got that vibe from Tressman. So regardless of the information he gives me and regardless of how many times he basically repeats the same phrases over and over again, I'm just happy to have like an actual football coach in charge of the Bears again.
Are you excited for Lovie Smith to announce that Wes Lunt is his quarterback?
Yeah, because there's really no other option right now. So if he names somebody else, it's going to be a tough year.
So on Saturdays, you're obviously glued to college football from morning to night. And then Sundays, you can watch the Bears and NFL and kind of relax. And I have the bit of the opposite with my work schedule, where Saturday's my quote-unquote day off, but I end up watching college football all day because I get to actually watch it without having to write or tweet. And you kind of have that on Sundays. How do you like that balance of from your Saturday to your Sunday in the fall?
I love watching football, whether it's work or not. So I love it. It's nice, because I love college football, but it's, NFL football is always going to be, as far as just the quality of the play, is always going to be better. It's just, I feel like colleges is more exciting because they're willing to try more things in college than they're ever going to be in the NFL because, there's so much on the line in the NFL. Nobody wants to get too risky. We all saw what happened to Chip Kelly. It's like as soon as you could start off with 20 wins in your first two seasons, but as soon as things go bad, if you're not doing what, everybody else does, you're gone. So I from that aspect, I prefer the college game, but it's nice to sit back and watch the NFL, and especially with fantasy football, because my fantasy teams are very important to me. So
of course, and you should tell everyone about them all the time.
Always. I make sure the entire my Twitter followers are always kept abreast of what my fantasy team is doing on that Sunday. But it's strange because I feel like the difference is, you get that Saturday quote unquote off before Sunday and you get to just chill and watch college. And for me, it's different because I really want to just chill and sit on the couch and do nothing but worry about the NFL. But I have to do stuff that's still kind of related to college, as far as work wise and things that I typically write on Sundays or just doing preparation for Monday and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of changed how much and how easily I'm able to consume the product. It's like I put aside the 3 hours on Sunday for the Bears, and then during the rest of the day, I'm not really watching as closely as I used to because I'm trying to get other things done, but I, beat certain deadlines that I have.
Right, right. So you can obviously go check out Tom Fornelli's stuff at CBSSports.com, and you had a best college comeback story. And I started to read it, and I was like, oh, maybe he's not going to mention the Northwestern Michigan State comeback from 06. And I was really hoping, and then it was like the third one, which I remember that game so vividly because I was working for the student radio station. It was my first game in the booth. So I was giddy, college student. Like, I woke up at like 7:30 on a Saturday, which is not easy when you're a college student. And here I am in the booth. That Northwestern team was so bad. Oh, and yeah. They finally turned it on. And the offense is clicking. And then they go up 38-3, and the Michigan State came all the way back. And of course, because it's Northwestern, it's only like – it's barely top 10 most heartbreaking games I've seen there. It's when you look at the Texas A&M Northern Iowa basketball comeback, which you compared these two, that one is pretty miraculous, even if it was against Northwestern, who's known to blow some leads.
Yeah, and I mean, that Michigan State team wasn't much better than Northwestern right. that season too, which is what made it even more interesting. It was like – because nobody was watching that game, unless you were like a hardcore Michigan State fan or, you know, a hardcore Northwestern fan, you weren't watching that game. And it's like you see it's 38-3 as you're watching other games. Then you're noticing that Michigan State's coming back. Like, I remember I turned that on just before Michigan State finally took the lead. I missed the entire comeback, but I remember flipping to it. It's like, oh, come on, this can't be happening. So it's the same thing as what happened with that Texas A&M Northern Illinois game the other night. There's what, like 50 seconds left. Northern Illinois is up 12 and there's other games on and my dog has to go outside. So I decided that this was a really good time to take the dog out.
Oh no.
And I take the dog out. I come back in and all of a sudden Texas A&M and Northern Iowa are in overtime. And I'm just sitting there like, wait a second, something might have happened here while I was gone.
Yes, I've tried to explain to one of my roommates what sports FOMO is, you know, the fear of missing out, to those of our listeners who don't know. And so she didn't understand that I was sitting on my couch all weekend watching college basketball. She said, well, maybe you should go do something like now, like go take a walk or go, you know, run some errands. Like, but what if I miss something? Like, what if I miss a game? So she's a Wisconsin grad. So we're watching the Wisconsin game, and I'm watching the score of UNI and A&M. And once A&M got within three, and I didn't have my Twitter up, so I didn't realize how they got within three. I thought it was just a free throw situation, and it didn't mean anything. And I switched, and she got really upset. And my other roommate, he was trying to help me explain to her, like, there's, you know, time in the situation here. And then we see what's going on, and we still had that sports FOMO, which you had too, that we didn't get to see the whole comeback. But luckily, about 5 minutes later, the entire comeback was on Twitter, and I could just watch it again.
Yeah, it's that moment where you realize you need to invest in like three or four more televisions. Just have like a giant wall of televisions.
The as somebody who observes Chicago sports, and by the way, Tom also you can follow him at Write Sox, WRITESOX, to get some good White Sox coverage. Not that anything's been happening with the White Sox of late.
Nothing.
Where do you compare – how do you compare Bears fans – and the media coverage of the Bears to the other teams? I know it's kind of always going to be different because of the beast that the NFL is. You know, so most markets, the NFL team's always going to be up there. But in Chicago, how do you rank, you know, the fans and the way everybody, you know, the extremes of if the Bears win, suddenly it's a Super Bowl team versus they lose, fire everybody. How do you compare that to the way other teams, Cubs, Blackhawks, Bulls, White Sox, are in this town?
Oh, the one key thing I noticed, I mean, if – with the Bears, like you said, it's a behemoth. It's huge. There's, you know, there are Packer fans and other fans of other teams spread throughout Chicago who, you know, move here from elsewhere. But by and large, you know, this is a city that's united behind the Bears. And it's I most often compare it to baseball, because you see with the media coverage, you know, with it split Cubs, White Sox in the city, and the fans are split Cubs, White Sox through the city. I feel like when it comes to the baseball, it's fans against fans. Is, you know, it's Cubs fans versus Sox fans. But when it comes to the Bears, it's all the fans versus the team, and then sometimes the media too, because, you know, the media is the...
We're the enemy.
Yeah, you're the enemy, because sometimes you say things about the Bears that the fans don't want to hear. It's, you know, truth, right. You know, reality of the situation. It's like, get off Cutler, stop ripping him, he's great. Or the other way, you know, Cutler's a bum. So I think there's more vitriol in the NFL as far as the Bears fans are concerned, because it's such a huge thing and people get really angry about the Bears because they haven't been very good for really most better part of the last 30 years since they won a Super Bowl. They've had moments, but overall there's been a lot more embarrassment than there has been something to be proud of with this team. I think that's, you know, if you just look at the way the 85 Bears are still treated around here, I think that's an indicator of how things just are generally. So it's, the crazy thing to me, too, when you think just back before Goodell took over, the NFL was always huge and the Bears were always huge in the city. But the one thing Goodell's done since he took over the NFL is it's now, you know, there's no off season for right. the NFL. It's a year round, every freaking, you know, month, there's something going on that's a major story, you know, whether it's free agency or the combine or the actual draft or training camp and into the season and so on. So it never ends. And I think with social media and everything bringing you closer to the, you know, you don't have to wait until the next day when the newspaper comes out or even go online to read the story. It's just there's so much information at your fingertips so quickly. It's like, I think the fans get angrier at the media, but at the same time, they feel like actually closer to the media because they kind of get a better idea of who they are as people because they follow them on Twitter. You get to see some personalities more than just, you know, team did this, released this, so on and so forth.
Yeah, and there's also the dynamic of the fact that it's just 16 games, and it's such, yeah. you know, and that, again, it's a factor of it being football. A few more minutes here with Tom Fornelli on the Chicago Football Podcast. Tom, you have one bear to get a beer with. Who would it be?
Kyle Long.
Yeah.
Kyle Long's actually, he won't know who I am, but he's, when the Bears drafted him, I tweeted something, you know, because he'd barely played at Oregon. So I can't remember who he was taken ahead of, but there were a couple other players in that draft who I had really had my eye on. And I just tweeted, I didn't say anything mean about him. I just said, I'm not sure about the Kyle Long pick. I just know I would rather have had this guy or this guy. Well, like last year, all of a sudden, Kyle Long favorites that tweet. So, you know, he's fun on Twitter. He has fun on Twitter. But at the same time, it's like you're searching your name that far back on Twitter to see who was, you know, saying, quote unquote, bad things about you and use that for motivation. So I don't know. I think he's fun. And I'd kind of like to have a beer with him just because of that, because I feel like he's the type of guy that even if you're not out in a social situation like that drinking, where he's going to tell you things, he's not really going to, you know, do the politically correct or maybe, you know, tighten it up. He's just going to tell you things about the football team that maybe he shouldn't.
Yeah, Kyle Long, of course, friend of the program. He was on the inaugural episode of Chicago Football Podcast, and he remembers everything. Trust me, our fearless leader here, Hub Arkish, what he said about Kyle Long in 2013 draft, Kyle hasn't forgotten that, and we bring it up every once in a while. What is your favorite part of the Bears beat? Is it when John Fox says something in a press conference and 17 of us tweet it at once?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Is it Biggs tweeting something that, like, you know, only six people really know what it is? Well, how would you describe, you know, following the Bears beat?
I go with the first one. It's always funny where it's like, you know, it's anything. It's a guy, you know, if a guy's questionable, all of a sudden there's 30 tweets in your timeline saying, you know, Shea McClellan, who's gone, we talked about it, but Shea McClellan questionable to play Sunday with an ankle injury. Just it's funny to me because it's like at the same time, I'm like, I could just unfollow some of these people, but I don't want to because I want to make sure I don't miss anything because the Bears are that important.
Well, thank you, Tom. I it's funny. We've joked in the media room, should we just have a pool tweeter? and, you know, like there's, you know, just having one person be that person. But I think, you know, different people will want to be that guy. And I think we should give it to Mark Potash if we gave it to anybody because he's the one that really riles up the Bears front office a little bit. But it's a fun thing. And as someone who's in there doing this, I think to myself, sometimes if it's so stupid. Twitter's so amazing and stupid at the same time. If I get it out first, I'm like, oh, I just typed faster than Brad Biggs. Look at me. It's
deal
out there.
With it.
It's out there first. But then if I look up and like Hogue and Adam Johns and everyone's tweeted, I'm like, all right, what can I say differently? But I still have to cover it because then suddenly my editor's like, how come everyone's tweeting about Shea McClellan being questionable and you haven't done anything yet? So it is kind of a weird thing. But I will promise you, I shouldn't say all of us, but some of us in the Bears beat do appreciate that as well. We do make fun of ourselves for it.
Yeah, you can always tell too. It's like not just with the Bears, but just in sports in general. When you're following a game, you can always tell when the announcement was weighed in the press box.
Yes, absolutely.
Here come the floods of this guy's out for the rest of the game, or this guy's questionable to return. It's like it makes you feel like you're in the press box, just imagining the voices that come out of the disembodied voice.
It's funny too because when the Bears are about to announce their inactives, the writers all huddle. They like everyone moves with their laptops so they could hear it. And what's happened over the years too is sometimes other teams post the Bears inactives before the Bears do. And then people are scrambling and then they're yelling at the Bears PR staff just because we need to tell everyone the seven non-important players that aren't going to play.
This fifth string running back's not going to play. The people demand to know.
It's so much fun though. It's so silly, but it's a lot of fun at the same time. Tom, we'll wrap up with this. If the over-under for Bears wins is 7.5, what is Tom Fornelli's Twitter tip of the day?
Oh, right now, it's hard to really say before the actual draft to see what they bring in, but just based off of what Ryan Pace has done this offseason so far, and I'm in an optimistic mood, I'm going to go over right now, but I would wait until after the draft for my official Twitter tip of the day, but right now we're leaning over. And maybe some of that's just finger crossing, but it's also looking around the rest of the division. You know, the Lions, I think, are going to be a little bit worse. It's hard to replace Calvin Johnson, and that they were struggling with him. So I think they're going to be a little bit worse. The Vikings, they're okay. I don't think there's anything great about them. I think that defense is really good. The offense is struggling. And the Packers are still going to be the Packers. But I think just what the Bears have done, they weren't horrible last year. They didn't have a good record, but they weren't horrible. And they've added real football players to the team so far this offseason, which can only make them better. So there's no huge stud major signing that's going to change everything, but just getting solid at positions where you were so weak last year is going to help this team. And I think 9-7, 10-6 is probably the most realistic outcome at this point.
Well, be sure you're following Tom Fornelli at Tom Fornelli for his Twitter tips of the day. And I'm sorry, Tom, that we did not get to any Drake LaRoche chatter on this podcast. I'm sure you want to talk about him.
I think, maybe that's what the Bears were missing under Trestman. Maybe if Drake LaRoche had been in that locker room, he could have united that team.
I've never seen a kid in the Bears locker room. They bring him to training camp sometime. But, if Cutler's on the team 10 years from now and Cam Cutler's
Camden's in there.
Yeah, that would be something interesting. And we also didn't get to Cutler's hair, because last week we talked to Pat Manley about Cutler's hair, and we already are doing a lot of infringing upon Hairlow Chicago, which I know you were a guest on, so we don't want to continue to do that. So we'll wrap it up here. Tom Fornelli, CBSSports.com, breaking down the draft and the Bears and fun stuff. Tom, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
All right, so a lot of fun there talking Bears NFL draft with Tom Fornelli. And coming up, we're going to do a little bit more Bears talk, and then we're having a lightning round with Danny Trevathan right here on the Chicago Football Podcast. We're going to close up shop here at the Chicago Football Podcast, and I had a chance, and by a chance I mean 1 minute, to do a lightning round of non-football related stuff with new Bears inside linebacker Danny Trevathan. Here it is. All right, joining us now on the podcast, new Bears linebacker Danny Trevathan. Danny, what are all the ways people have mispronounced your last name?
Trevathan, Trevathan, Levington, all types of stuff.
What is your favorite thing to do, not football, off the field, favorite hobbies?
Play with my daughter. I like, playing games. I like going out. I like fishing. That's about it.
Willie Young here is really into fishing, so yep. That's going to be something I'm sure you two will talk about. What is the song that you got to have on to get you ready for a game?
The song I got to have, Lie to Me by Peach Boy.
Okay, like the feature.
Yeah, I gotta have the
Trick Daddy on
too.
All right,
let's go.
There you go. What is one thing you need to have with you when you're on the road, traveling for a road game? You're packing. What's one thing you gotta have?
Headphones.
You got your Beats.
Beats, no matter. I take the iPhone headphones if I can't find my Beats.
Whatever it takes. So what would be like your last meal? Perfect meal. What would it be?
Like steak.
There's some good steakhouse in Chicago.
Yeah, I went to Del Frisco.
Oh, so you've already seen it. Yeah, so there you
amazing.
Go.
Wonderful.
There you go. A couple more. Do you have a favorite? You haven't been with him in a couple years. A Foxy-ism, a favorite thing that Foxy would say to guys on the field.
He was just always make jokes about people. Like I said, he told me, I check my room, but you can be great today, Danny. Okay. That's stuck with me for like 4 or 5 years.
All righty. And that last one, what's your favorite? Probably don't answer this. What's your favorite football memory?
Probably the Super Bowl or, you know, interception, something like
that. Yeah. All right, Dan Trevathan, New Chicago Bears. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I give myself some credit because I'm pretty sure I always referred to him as Danny Trevathan. I don't know if I ever screwed that up, but I imagine some people have. So that was New Bears inside linebacker Danny Trevathan. Just a few fun questions with him, talking steak and fishing and whatnot. Yeah, Bears inside linebacker is looking pretty good now with Trevathan, Drell Freeman. We talked with Tom Fornelli. That's, you know, Reggie Ragland was the ultimate mock draft pick for the Bears at 11. Not going to go that way anymore. Defensive line is kind of where their focus, I imagine, is going to be, and offensive tackle. A few things coming in just news-wise right now. The Ryan Pace is talking to folks at the owners' meetings in Boca Raton. Hub Arkish is there, so be sure to check out his stuff at profootballweekly.com. The two sides are still talking to Alshon Jeffrey. I expect a long-term deal to get done at some point before July 15th. Maybe on July 14th or something like that. Also, according to Adam Johns of the Sun-Times, Ryan Pace says Kevin White is 100% healthy, which I think will be music to the ears of Chicago Bears Nation. All right, Dan Mott, John Solly, as we close up shop here, any thoughts on what we learned about the draft and the Chicago media market from Tom Fornelli? John?
You know, it really does seem like DeForest Buckner is the dream pick right now.
He is.
And I fear, as a Bears fan, is that this is peaking too early. That there's going to be some team above the Bears that goes, wait a minute, Buckner's a top five talent. Why are we not picking him? Let's not panic on Paxton Lynch or Goff or Carson Wentz. So I really like the idea of Buckner on the Bears. I fear it's a little it's peaking too early.
And I love Dan the way he talked about how Bears fans are and the way that they just got this vitriol, and it's just different with the way football is. And we had Barstool Big Cat, Dan Katz, on the show in November, and he kind of said the same thing.
Yeah.
That's just how Bears fans are in this town. And Cub fans are maybe the closest, I think, but because it's split in this city, there's really no comparison to the Bears.
I like what he said about, you know, the 85 Bears are still royalty in this town. And I mean, that was so long ago, and yet they're still thought of as these just heroes and icons amongst Bears fans. And so I think that really just kind of shows you how crazy Bears fans are and how excited they are for their football team. And it'll be exciting to see what the draft brings and who the fans either boo and get angry about or just get really excited about. And hopefully Bears fans have the means of being able to see a first-round draft pick perform. It was so unfortunate what happened to Kevin White. And as a Bears fan myself, I'm just excited to see who they pick and to see, you know, this pick on the field and actually performing.
Didn't get into that with Tom about the draft and how they react. That's a good point, Dan. You know, Kevin White was a no-brainer. I think everyone was excited about that. John, as you said, if it's DeForest Buckner, I think if it's A'shaun Robinson, I think people would be excited about that. If it's Ronnie Stanley, I think because of the Notre Dame connection to Chicago, maybe folks would still be excited about that. But you're not going to get that much, you know, cheers down there in Grant Park. We didn't even talk about with Tom, Chi-Town becoming Draft Town again, which is just such a silly. Nobody calls it Chi-Town, but whatever. It's the NFL. If the NFL says it's Chi-Town, then doggone it, they're going to call it Chi-Town.
No, we don't have to do that.
Oh, we don't have to do anything.
Okay.
So, no, it was fun stuff with Tom. And, again, come to our website. We got updated needs for the Bears at chicagofootball.com. We'll have stuff on what Ryan Pace is saying, the reporters from Hub, up there and at profootballweekly.com. Check out the Pro Football Weekly podcast as well as we kind of recap free agency and look ahead to what's coming up. The draft is coming up. And we are going to continue to have lots of draft preview content on this show. There it is. At number 11, the Chicago Bears select Chicago football executive producer Dan Mott. That would get a lot of boos. That would get a lot of boos. But it'll be fun. So we got some great guests lined up for you. And be sure to go back and listen to our old episodes of Pat Manley and Jarrett Payton. All right, that's going to do it for us here at the Chicago Football Podcast. Huge thank you to Tom Fornelli of CBSSports.com. Follow him at Tom Fornelli. Hopefully everyone enjoyed that interview. To my executive producer, Dan Mott, and associate producer, John Solly, everyone here at Shaw Media. I'm Kevin Fishman. That does it for the Chicago Football Podcast. We'll talk some more Bears next week.